Do you remember the picture of my son? It won a Pulitzer Prize. The picture of him lying dead on the sidewalk at Columbine High School. His name is Daniel. My name is Brian Rohrbaugh. Did you know that the roots of the Columbine murders started back in 1967 when our Colorado lawmakers passed a law that allowed a baby to be put to death because her father was a criminal? In one evil law, they changed our country from a culture of life to a culture of death. Since that day, 50 million babies in this country have been killed through abortion. Will you stand with me? Will you stand in the place of just one of these victims? Join me as Colorado Right to Life presents the annual March for Life at the State Capitol, Saturday, January 21st at 1:30 p.m. I will share with you a story that few know. Join me, because abortion is always wrong.
Warning, warning, there's truth overhead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob in your life.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and we had scheduled today, in fact, we're going to do it, an interview with the president of Americans United for Life regarding Supreme Court nominee Samuel Alito and the hearings that have ended and the vote that's scheduled for next week. But just today, the U.S. Supreme Court has issued a ruling upholding Oregon's suicide law, physician-assisted suicide law, that a doctor can give a lethal injection to a patient, a terminally ill patient, and kill that patient. So that's not what some call passive suicide, where you starve to death someone. That's active euthanasia, where the doctor literally gives an injection, a lethal injection, and kills the patient. So I'd like to welcome Peter Samuelson. Peter, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thank you, Bob. Pleasure to be here with you this afternoon.
Peter, for those who don't know, Americans United for Life is the oldest national pro-life organization in the country. Now, let me get your take on this decision. We think, of course, as the pastor of Denver Bible Church, somebody who tries to do my best to explain right and wrong, that this is a tragic decision.
I think that's right. Any time that the nation advances towards more euthanasia, it is definitely a tragic decision. We certainly wish there was a different court in place that would have upheld Attorney General Ashcroft's attempts to limit euthanasia and stop what Oregon had done.
Now, this was one of the first, if not the first case, that John Roberts was sitting on the Supreme Court when they heard the oral arguments. And I recall he was questioning one of the sides in this case and saying that this violates a federal regulation of medicine and the right that the feds have to regulate medicine, because here medicine is being used intentionally to kill a patient. And when he asked that question, it was somewhat discouraging to me because it seemed to be a bit off point. What's wrong is to kill an innocent person. And do you see a problem when we try to find loopholes or superficial reasons for opposing something that could be considered murder, thou shalt not murder?
Well, I think often, especially at the Supreme Court, the actual case is talking about details that aren't right on point. And you and I are certainly people who want to go right on point and get to the good or the evil of the matter. The Supreme Court some years ago held that states could not stop people who wanted to refuse treatment and die, and they have taken a posture of not wanting to address the core question of, are we going to let people kill each other or kill themselves in the euthanasia or in abortion?
Yeah, I think that was back in 1990, the Supreme Court, and I think rightly said, it's not wrong to let an irreversibly dying person, it's not wrong to let that person die, but it is wrong to kill someone who's not dying.
And we wish, you and I both wish, the Supreme Court would come out and say that. And unfortunately, what they said in a later case was that they would let states decide if the state would allow physician-assisted suicide.
Now, of the 9 justices on the Supreme Court, well, right now, 8.
Actually, no, still 9, because O'Connor is still sitting on the court, and
that's
she participated
right
in the subpoena.
She did. She did, and she's one of the ones who ruled in favor of physician-assisted suicide and giving.
And that actually raises a really intriguing question. If we had not had the delay caused by the unfortunate nomination of Harriet Myers, whether or not we might have already had Samuel Alito sitting on the bench and whether he might have been able to persuade a Kennedy or someone else, and we might have reached a different decision. But that's a mere hypothetical, and certainly we are where we are, and she is still on the bench, and she's still issuing rulings.
This was a 6-3 ruling, and it's a Republican Supreme Court. 7 of the 9 justices have been nominated by Republican presidents, and the 3 who dissented were Republicans, Scalia, Roberts, and Thomas. But I've only been able to see excerpts from their dissent, and I'd just like to quote one sentence out of here. This is from an Associated Press report of today's ruling. Let's see. Written by Scalia for John Roberts and Clarence Thomas. The court's ruling is perhaps driven by a feeling that the subject of assisted suicide is none of the federal government's business. It is easy to sympathize with that position. And then they basically made their argument a technical argument that the government has the right to regulate medicine. So it's sort of a bureaucratic ruling they've given us, and where they address the issue of suicide and killing the innocent. Scalia wrote for John Roberts and Clarence Thomas, the court's decision is perhaps driven by a feeling that the subject of assisted suicide is none of the federal government's business. It is easy to sympathize with that position. Your comments on that?
Well, I think he probably hits it right on the head there in two respects. One, that it is a feeling. I think we have been dominated by an approach to both law and to deciding what's right and wrong, unfortunately, in this country since the 60s, with the mantra, if it feels good, do it. And I think that the majority said, this feels right.
So
I think the other thing that's going on there is the majority said, this is not a decision that the federal government has to make. We simply aren't in the business of deciding whether euthanasia is right or wrong. We're going to hide our heads in the sand and let the states decide.
So,
and that's what we hear on abortion all the time, is when people say, I don't want to make that decision. It's not my decision. I'm not going to force my morality on someone. Let's let someone else decide.
All right. So Peter Samuelson, president of Americans United for Life, if the Congress changed our regulations regarding medicine and they explicitly allowed the use of medicines, prescription drugs, for lethal injection to kill patients, then it seems that even Scalia, Roberts, and Thomas may support that if that becomes the law, because they've ruled simply – the foundation of their ruling is on this bureaucratic issue of federal medication and the rights of the federal government to prescribe medicines for certain purposes. And they said it's easy to sympathize with the other position that lethal injection should be legal.
Well, I guess I'd have two reactions there. One, I think he said it is easy to sympathize. I'm not sure that he would come down and say that it's easy to conclude rationally that the other side is the right one. I think he's saying that he understands why they end up in that wrong road, but he disagrees. Second, I would take this case today in the ruling not as a reason to worry the federal government might go in the wrong direction, but as a real call to action by Congress, by pro-life members of Congress, to step in and fix the federal legislation at issue. It's only because the federal legislation was unclear about the Attorney General's power to do this that the majority said the legislation was unclear, therefore we will defer to Oregon.
So
if Congress would step in and make it clear that the federal government has the authority to step in and regulate this to prevent assisted suicide, then would I think the Supreme Court would have reached a different result.
Do you think then my fear is unfounded that if Congress in fact passed a law legitimizing lethal injection, then you think Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts would strike that down on moral grounds, saying it's wrong to kill the innocent?
I certainly hope they would strike it down on grounds that the innocent deserve to be protected under our constitutional system. So I don't share your fear on that. And certainly, given the politics today, I would hope that we have enough pro-life members of the Senate and the House to stop that from happening, to stop Congress from passing such a law. But you're right, they could pass such a law, and then we'd have to find out where the Supreme Court would go with it. It would certainly force the Supreme Court to engage the moral issue much more head-on.
When we've heard in testimony from John Roberts and Samuel Alito, statements where they are affirming their role as judges that, for example, Samuel Alito, let's just think about him. He's been on the federal court for 15 years, and he has repeatedly, for 15 years, in almost every opportunity, ruled on the abortion side, the Planned Parenthood side of case after case after case. I have a list here of his decisions. Couldn't he, for the past 15 years, have said in late-term abortion, wrongful death of a fetus, partial birth abortion, couldn't he have said that the Constitution protects life and I will not rule in favor of partial birth abortion? Wouldn't it have been right for him to do that?
I think he certainly could have. I certainly, as a pro-lifer, would love to see some federal judges stand up and say, this is what I believe is right under our Constitution. I believe our Constitution does protect life, and I'm going to rule this way regardless of where the Supreme Court is.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting decision for a judge to make, certainly on the partial birth abortion case that came before the blind African-American judge in New York on the Second Circuit last year. You would have almost expected him to say that. Because he certainly was so appalled, as you could tell by the way he asked questions and the questions he asked, he was so appalled at the evil of the partial birth abortion. And yet he's one who came down and ruled, saying, this is what the Supreme Court has held, therefore I must strike down the ban on partial birth abortion.
Well, I'm talking about Samuel Alito. He voted in 2000 to keep partial birth abortion legal because of precedent.
Yes, he did. And he has, through his entire career, deferred to the precedent articulated by the U.S. Supreme Court. I think it will be interesting to see what he does when he is confirmed, if as expected he is confirmed in the next several weeks, once he is no longer subject to that precedent. I think what we'll see is his judicial philosophy come to the fore, and I think that his judicial philosophy will be much more favorable to protecting life, especially when Congress and when the Senate and the House move in that direction themselves.
Peter, we are Christian pro-lifers. We believe that an unborn child is a living human being who's innocent, who has a right to life. Right? That's one of the main goals of your organization, right?
It is. I fully agree with that. We believe from conception on there is a unique human being there, and we have a moral obligation to defend that and protect that human being.
So when Samuel Alito voted as a federal judge, while so many Christian pro-life lawyers were trying to stop partial birth abortion, he voted, he used his authority as a governing official to keep legal partial birth abortion and other strongly pro-abortion rulings he issued. Was that immoral? Was that wrong of him to do that? Was it immoral?
No, I don't think it was. I think that he found himself in a tragic situation where he did not have an independent decision to make. He was subject to the authority of the Supreme Court. He could have chosen to object on conscience and to say, I disagree and here is my ruling, and let the Supreme Court overturn him. That's certainly one path he could have gone down. I think he went down a path that said, I want to be part of this system. I want to engage it and make a difference. It's a much more difficult path to go down, to thread that needle, to balance and say, when is too much? Where have I actually morally compromised, and where am I being a good judge, trying to use the influence I have for good when I have opportunities to do it? I think that's the path he's chosen. I think it's a much more challenging and risky and difficult path, and I think that we owe him gratitude for doing that.
So you think, Peter, you said, when have I compromised too much? It sounds like you're saying a judge, it's his job. He gets paid to do it. He's supposed to follow this process. So he could compromise on thou shalt not murder, and he could use his authority as a federal judge, and you as a Christian are saying that it is a moral thing for him to basically sign a death warrant to kill an innocent child, to compromise on thou shalt not murder, to uphold a greater precedent, which is some law or some process.
Well, I don't think he is actually signing the death warrants. Perhaps that's where you and I reach a different conclusion on this. I think that he is doing the job he has, using the influence he has in a very responsible way. I think we have to remember that the ultimate person, the two people making the decision to kill in this case, in any case of abortion, are the doctor and the woman. And I think those are the two people who face the ultimate moral responsibility for their decision there at the moment of the abortion to kill.
Yeah, there's a lot of guilt to go around. Obviously, if governing officials pass laws or issue rulings that give people that legitimize owning blacks or raping women or killing Jews or killing babies, the governing officials and the judges who authorize such behavior, don't they share in the guilt of that ultimate crime?
I think some of them do, and I think some of them do not.
How would you distinguish?
I would distinguish those who actually have an opportunity to make the decision you're urging them to make. And I think when you're a lower court judge, your obligation, if you want to stay a lower court judge and remain in the system, is to follow precedents. And I think in a constitutional system where we have, where we as citizens, there's a lot of guilt to go around. That happens to us as citizens, too, if we don't engage politically and try to elect leaders who will change these laws. I think that there is room for activism, and certainly Americans United for Life engages in trying to promote good laws and promote change in public opinion and change in the ultimate legal structure. I think back to the parable of the talents that Jesus told, where the rich man gave 5 talents to one servant and 3 to another and 1 to a third, and the one servant was afraid and hid the talents in the ground. And when the master came back, he was condemned harshly the servant who hid the talent. And that servant was afraid. He was afraid to take a risk. He was afraid to do something that might fail. I think that any time we confront evil in a huge bureaucratic system like the government is, there's several ways to challenge it. We can challenge it through active and noisy protest, which has a role and can lead to good things. We can also challenge it from inside, quietly, through engagement. And those two types of challenge look very different, and they present different risks and different challenges, but they both are risky. And I think each of us as individuals, we have an obligation to challenge the evil of abortion. And then I think we have to decide what is the way I'm going to challenge it, and then do what is most effective in that way.
Peter, I'm utterly discouraged by your defense and your statement that that a judge or a governing official could legitimize an ultimate crime, murder, whatever the crime is, in this case, murder of innocent children, and that judge would bear no guilt, and it would be...
I guess I would pause that I don't think that in the case you've given of Samuel Alito that he is legitimizing it.
I think he is simply recognizing
and acknowledging that the Supreme Court is the one who has legitimized.
Legitimized means to declare legally valid. In 2000, when Alito had authority as a federal judge, and there was a case raging in New Jersey by pro-life lawyers. In fact, the New Jersey legislature agreed with the pro-life side, and they asked Samuel Alito to vote to ban partial birth abortion, this egregious form of killing of late-term babies. And Samuel Alito used his authority as a judge. Many judges issue rulings that are later overturned. But his authority, his vote, his voice, he legitimized partial birth abortion and said, partial birth abortion will remain legal in New Jersey per my authority. And for you not to be able to say that when he did that, he became a governing official who legitimized the killing of an innocent child, and that was immoral. I'm discouraged, Peter. You're one of our leading pro-life lawyers in the country.
Well, and I share your discouragement, Bob, but my discouragement runs the opposite way, which is the path you're leading down logically is a path that feels really good because you get to protest intensely and loudly against someone like Judge Alito and against the path of engagement he's taking. And it feels good to protest, and it feels good to call him to a standard that would lead him to act in a different way. The difficulty is, though, that that path leads only to failure. It leads only to complete and ultimate failure to change a culture of abortion in this nation, because what you're calling is for every Judge Alito who is in the system and has a chance to rise up to a place where they have real influence, you're calling them to step out of the system, and then we end up abandoning the field to pro-abortion justices.
I actually,
we know what happens if we abandon the field to only pro-abortion justices. They will rule for abortion,
Peter,
over and over again.
Peter, you're making political calculations, and I would suggest to you that political calculation is fine as long as it is constrained to morality. And once Christian leaders have embraced compromise on thou shalt not murder as a political convenience to win a long-term battle, we've already lost the battle. In 1995, Alito voted to keep it easy to get a tax-funded abortion by claiming rape, even when no crime had been reported to the police. In 97, Alito voted to prevent parents from suing for the wrongful death of an unborn child, that there's no protection in law he could find for a child killed wrongfully by negligence or whatever, malpractice. In 2000, he votes to keep legal partial birth abortion. In 2001, he votes to give $500,000 to Planned Parenthood attorneys. In 2004, Alito could not find it in his pro-life heart to give asylum to a Chinese man whose son was killed by forced abortion in China. And this is issue after issue, and he is being approved of by our Christian pro-life leaders around the country, being affirmed that these decisions are moral, that they're just, that they're right, because he's following process, even though he is violating thou shalt not murder as a governing official.
Well, that's where I think that I and others who would say that he is doing the right thing in those cases would draw a distinction between approving the substantive result of the case and approving the result of an intermediate judge. I think the results in those cases are tragic, and I lay the responsibility for the results at the feet of the Supreme Court, who has said, we uphold abortion, we insist that abortion on demand be legal in this country. But I think when we look at a constitutional system and we say we want to live in a democracy and our democracy is governed by a constitution, we have three branches of power, the legislative, the executive, and the judicial. I think that any time we don't have a judiciary that interprets the law, that when the judiciary goes out there and starts making the law, as we've seen the U.S. Supreme Court do for the last 30 or 40 years, that's a threat to democracy and a threat to freedom. And I think what we see in Judge Alito is a judge who has been committed to saying, I am going to interpret the law. It is not my place to make law. It is my place to interpret the law. And that's how I, as a judge, contribute to a free, stable, and healthy democracy. When we have a healthy democracy where the judges are interpreting the law, then we can make political calculations, and I'm convinced that the public wants to stop abortion, wants to limit abortion, and that we'll make progress when this issue is returned to state legislatures.
So, Peter Samuelson, you're saying that the Constitution should take precedent over thou shalt not murder. If the process that is designed by the Constitution, that you have the Supreme Court and then you have inferior courts, and those inferior courts do not have authority, obviously, over the Supreme Court. So it is valid for men to make agreements, write constitutions, pass laws, create process, and then it becomes moral for that process to supersede, to take precedent over thou shalt not murder. You don't see that
I'm not
as
saying that the Constitution should take precedence
the
over
process.
Murder.
The
what
process.
I am saying, Bob, is that if we have a place where we don't have the rule of law,
yeah,
then we will have tyranny and we will have slavery, we will have fascism, we will have communism.
Peter,
the only alternative to fascism, communism, slavery, tyranny is to have a democracy and a rule of law. And having the rule of law requires judges that will interpret the law. Now, the question of whether the Constitution embraces murder or whether the Constitution embraces slavery is a political question, and that's a place where the Constitution should not embrace slavery. The Constitution should not embrace murder. Those are immoral positions.
If the
those are challenges and problems in a society that we have to solve politically,
Peter,
through our elected leaders.
If the Constitution creates a process or a law is passed by the Constitution or the Constitution is amended, and that law or that process violates thou shalt not murder, is that then valid? Is that a valid law or a valid process or a valid decision, even if it violates thou shalt not murder? The Constitution rightly violate thou shalt not murder, and then those who follow it are not guilty?
Well, it certainly can legally violate it, but as with slavery, when the Constitution was passed, it proclaimed that slaves, that blacks would be three-fifths of a person.
Right.
That was certainly an immoral result.
It was immoral, and so
it was the law of the land,
and
it was a right thing for the American public to rise up and say, we will not have this, and we will change it.
And eventually,
we got amendments to the Constitution to change it.
Wouldn't you agree that any country, anywhere in the world, throughout any time in history, if they passed laws or a constitution or a process that legitimized murder, that those laws or that process would be invalid? Don't you agree with that? And that those who followed that were immoral for taking a man-made agreement and giving that precedent over thou shalt not murder?
Well, at a high level of abstraction, I would agree with you, but the way you apply it in these specific cases, I, again, would disagree.
Well, Peter,
what happens is there's a difference between whether the Constitution is immoral when it embraces slavery or when the Supreme Court embraces abortion, and the question of how do we change that evil, how do we change that immorality. The right way to fix that problem is not from a judge violating the rule of law, but from a people to rise up and pass an amendment to change that constitution.
Well, that's a political calculation, Peter Samuelson. And I would submit to you that as long as our Christian pro-life leaders are comfortable approving of judges who violate thou shall not murder and even calling their decisions moral decisions, we will not win because we've lost sight of the foundation of right and wrong, which is thou shall not murder.
I would say that we have been making tremendous progress since 1973, that when the Supreme Court came down and passed Roe versus Wade, the Christian America, pro-life America, was caught off guard, that it took some time to organize ourselves, but we're increasingly organized, that we have shown over and over again that when legislators, when elected officials pass laws and take actions that are pro-life, that they get reelected and the public supports them. I'm highly excited, highly confident, enthusiastic, and encouraged that we are moving back closer and closer to a pro-life America.
Well, Peter, the national...
there's no silver bullet that gets us there tomorrow.
Yeah, right.
It's a slow, incremental step. We have to be faithful to it. We have to be persistent. We have to keep going. And we can't give up. I think that the restoring a proper judicial philosophy to the U.S. Supreme Court, where the court interprets the law instead of makes the law, allows us then to continue to fight for life in the legislatures and through elections. I find that very encouraging, and I think that Judge Alito, if he's confirmed, would take us one step closer because he would help the Supreme Court interpret the law.
Peter, the American public is far more pro-choice today than they were in 1973 when the U.S. Supreme Court, out of the blue, legalized abortion nationwide. Immorality, the divorce rate, kids born out of wedlock, today's acceptance of homosexuality where there was none, pornography absolutely pervading our society, satellite and cable TV. You're making a political calculation saying that these...
No, I'm looking at opinion polls, and opinion polls show, especially among the youth, that people are more pro-life.
Now, people are not completely
pro-life. They're not as pro-life as you are. They may not be pro-life as I am. When you ask them the hard question, should abortion be outlawed, people don't like to answer that question. But if you ask, is abortion a bad thing? Is abortion the taking of a life? Should abortion be restricted? Is abortion something we don't want to be prevalent in society? You get a resounding answer that says, no, we don't want any of that.
Well,
and that's a very encouraging thing. Now, it's not everywhere we want to be, and we have more work to do, and there's more public opinion to change, but that's where each of us has to go out, and we have to influence our neighbors.
Peter, do you agree that the American public is far more pro-choice, pro-abortion today than they were in 1973?
No, I don't. I think the American public is much more pro-life.
Well, you haven't looked at the polls then of what Americans believed about abortion in 73 because they were overwhelmingly against it, and today it's a pretty tight race.
I think you have to look at how the questions are worded. And
when
I look at the polls, and I have looked at the polls, I think that we're making progress. I'm encouraged by it.
Well, Peter Samuelson, I want to let you know that I'm discouraged by your willingness to compromise on thou shalt not murder. And I believe you're destroying the hope of the pro-life community.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Bob. I certainly think that the path you are offering people is a path that feels really good and it's really exciting, but it's a path that will guarantee our ultimate defeat. I think that the path that Americans United for Life has committed to is a path of incrementalism, a path that says we look at a glass and it's half full, it's not half empty.
We're delighted
to get a glass that's half full because right now we have nothing. Right now,
incrementalism is fine. Save one child if you could only save one, but don't violate thou shall not murder as part of your political strategy and think then the good guys are going to win.
Well, save one child if you can save one. Right now we have Justice O'Connor on the court, and we lose over and over and over again. And I think Judge Alito would be a tremendous advance, incremental advance over Justice O'Connor any day on a whole host of issues that I think are important to the freedom of America and to our democracy.
Thank you for your time, Peter Samuelson.
Thank you for having me, Bob. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. We're out of time. Maranatha, check him out. Great school.